Hello and welcome to Healing From Within. I am your host, Cheryl Glick, Reiki Master Teacher, author of the newest book in a trilogy, A New Life Awaits, Spirit Guided Insights to Support Global Awakening, which shares stories of healing, miracles, and messages from Universal Source that shows us our challenges are not merely economic, political, or societal, but often a disconnect from our true being or inner wisdom. I am delighted today to welcome Dr. Michael J. Young, author of The Illness of Medicine, Experiences of Clinical Practice, who shares the significant obstacles patients endure, as well as the aspiration many of the truly dedicated medical professionals feel. And that's exasperation, is what I meant to say. Hello, Dr. Young, and thank you for joining us on Healing From Within to share your perspective of
many of your
own professional and personal feelings about healing and the challenges we face in finding ways to heal mind, body, and spirit in a rapidly changing world.
Yeah. A very difficult time right now, yes, indeed.
Yes, absolutely. Michael, as listeners of Healing From Within have discovered over the years, my esteemed guests and I share many stories, miracles, and truths about the nature of both physical and spiritual life and how merging both, as well as merging allopathic and alternative healing methods, offer people a way to discover more about life, happiness, and living with hope beyond any of the physical challenges. And today, we discover a journey of self-discovery and perspectives and heal many traumas. And because beyond pain and suffering and limitation is the path to freedom from fear and the journey and discoveries are never-ending. In today's episode of Healing From Within, Dr. Michael Young will discuss the controlling efforts of the insurance industry and the clout pharmaceutical companies have over us, which has become overwhelming. Dr. Young remembers a time in his 30-year medical practice when these industries worked for us and the physicians. We will explore how to navigate through our healthcare system beyond the mechanism of profit that it has become. I always love to ask my guests to think back to their childhood and remember a person, place, event that may have shown them or others the lifestyle, work, or interest they might have as an adult. So, Michael, think back and remember something that brought you to understand the way you would proceed in your adult life.
Well, I think perhaps my clearest memories are as a very young person. I always enjoyed going to my pediatrician, and for that reason I had written a chapter in my book about that experience. This person simply exuded warmth and kindness. He was gentle yet firm, if I can use those in the same sentence. He always demonstrated a sense of competence and knowing. And I was always happy. Oh, sure, we got our shots and things that weren't so fun. But somehow going to his office for those regular checkups, I just felt good afterwards.
Isn't that wonderful? I mean, my son, when I used to take him, when he'd get to the door, he would say, home, home.
Right.
Let's start pointing away and turning away.
Well, to this day, I mean, here we are, 50 years plus later, I can still smell his office.
Well, my son smelled it too, but in his case, it wasn't his destiny.
But I can smell him. I mean, I hear his voice. He's been dead for many years, but I can still hear his deep resonating voice, and I can remember being in the exam room and feeling the sticky paper that you sat on and the cold room, but it just resonates very much
with
me.
Well, we meet many people in our lives who are guides, who tell us things or share experiences, and it empowers us to find our own path or destiny forward. And they're not put there randomly.
Yes, but they are there for a purpose. What was most interesting to your question and to my experiences with him is that he always told me the truth. Mm. Here I am as a little boy, 5 years old, 6 years old, whatever age I was. He never said that this shot was going to be, oh, just a little mosquito bite. No, he would tell me, this is going to hurt. He was honest, he was forthright, and he did what he did, and yes, it hurt, I took it, but I always maintained my trust in him because of that.
You trusted him, yeah. That's a very important thing for children to have. They need that to trust their parents, their teachers, their medical professionals. Yeah, and if they lose that trust, there's like a wound to their soul and heart.
And it's okay to say no. It's okay to say no. And so often I see today, you know, parents or anyone really who is afraid to not make that child responsible for what they did, or, you know, to award them for just about everything they do. And that's really not what life is. Life is a lot of picking yourself up, dusting yourself off, and going on. It is not one of constant awards and ribbons and banners and trophies. And so I do feel that there is room, and it's your best friends who will tell you when you're wrong, and the people who care most about you that will do so.
And it helps you. It helps you realize there's no failure. There's only experience. And we're going to go on to the next one and do the best we can. That's all we can do. My mom always used to say that. Just do the best you can. There's nothing else, nothing more.
Well, if you fail to learn from it, then you've really lost the opportunity.
Right. It's an opportunity. I like that. Tell us about the hopes and intentions you had as a young doctor, your training and interests, and how the system was then and what's going on now. In other words, what goes on behind the scenes in the medical health delivery system in the USA? That's a big question.
It's a big question, and it would take hours to explain, but I will give my abridged version.
Right.
My first experiences in healthcare were following my father. He was an ophthalmologist, and I had the opportunity when I was in college, late teens, to go with him to the hospital, where he was, in my mind, just a noble person. Everyone acknowledged him. I got to see him interact with other healthcare professionals. There was just an admiration, a respect, and the hospital itself seemed to be a place of quiet, of calm, of strength. It was a place people got better. And I remember being very awestruck with that feeling, and it was because of his kindness, because of who he was. I went into medicine, and when I went into training, I had known I wanted to be a surgeon, and I was very much excited about that opportunity. And to this day, I still consider myself that person from so many years ago. Unfortunately, I feel that I have become entangled, obstructed, if you will, not so much by medicine, but by the environment with which we have to practice it.
Mm.
And that environment has become one of bureaucratic corporate control. It has become one of a monetary measurement of almost everything that is done. Everything is counted and calibrated. It is one where I would say volume has become more important than quality. And those are the metrics by which reimbursement is done, for instance, with many of the insurance companies to hospitals, many of the contracts that hospitals have with various insurance companies is predicated on how much of X or Y is done, not necessarily how well. And so I have become vastly disappointed not with the providers or the nurses, but so much with the environment and the people that are controlling them. We are no longer in charge of our domain of healing.
Right.
We have become subject to so many variable metrics that are out of our control. Physicians, for instance, are often employed now by these corporate structures, and therefore they're told how many patients to see per hour, right? How many, how many patients you can see has become more important than how well you see those patients. And so patients themselves, when they go to see the physician, my God, they feel rushed. They feel stressed just to get, you know, a few sentences out of what's wrong before they're being ushered out.
Mm.
So speed and money seems to have become the dictatorial processes by which healthcare has become subject to.
Yeah, so medical care has to be perceived on both sides by the patient and practitioner. And the patient often is not aware of the complications within the system you are describing. Well, I am, of course, but...
Well, listen, all physicians are patients.
Absolutely. We're all human beings.
That's the great balance system there. We're all patients at one point.
Yeah.
And since I have stepped out of healthcare as a practitioner, and now that I write about it and teach at a university about healthcare and surgical device innovation, I now am treated differently than when I was on the inside of that circle. Even though I still am a physician and an MD, I am no longer part of that internal system. And so I am the one who is now having to navigate a system that when I was on the inside, everything was just more of who I knew than what I knew to get something accomplished.
Mm.
It is very challenging.
So it's a little easier. It was a little easier.
Well, you know, in the healthcare system today, if you don't have an advocate or if you don't know how to navigate the system, you are going to get lost and you will spiral down to the bottom because the system mandates that you advocate or have someone who can do it for you. It is too complex. The rules are so challenging to get health care, to get proper health care. It isn't good enough to know who the right doctor is. You have to find a way to navigate through your insurance company to allow you to see that particular individual. And your insurance may be dictated by the employer that you work for. Therefore, you can go to Hospital X, which is 10 miles away, but Hospital Y is 1 minute away. But you can't go there because it's not in your plan. It's not in the agreed upon.
That is really exasperating. Yeah.
It is. Yes, and there are many patients who need to have more immediate health care. Well, which hospital is in your plan?
Oh.
And you may go to the local hospital only to have immediate care delivered, which is required, but then you have to be transferred, and then records have to be duplicated. Then electronic health care records have to be sent over, which never occurs. The systems are incompatible with one another.
Yeah.
So the nuances of just going from one hospital to the next, predicated upon your insurance requisites, creates a whole other system of complexity that's very hard to navigate. And this is when things are good. Now you're talking about someone who is ill, someone who is in pain,
yes,
someone who is scared, someone who has potentially been injured. They are not at their best. Their defenses are down. They perhaps are not thinking with the utmost clarity that they would normally do or have for decisions, which compounds the problem. They're very vulnerable and are not in a position to properly negotiate, navigate.
Yeah, I want to tell you a story about that. You just explained it exactly the way it is, how the patient might feel, and how the system and the people working in the system might not be sensitive enough to what's going on, Right, and I recently had to go to a big group, Northwell Health, right, and see a pulmonologist. My regular doctor recommended it because I had this bronchial, like, mucus that I just couldn't seem to get under control that was affecting me. And as a host of a radio show, that's not a very good thing.
Right.
So anyhow, so I go into this a new facility, and I was uncomfortable immediately. The desk, the way
right.
it was set up, the way there was like a, I'm an empath, there was a cold feeling there. And of course with COVID, everything is turned around, the chairs and this and that, and you
right.
get up, you put your face in a thermometer there to take your temperature, and it just felt very...
Well, there was no empathy. There was
right. no connection. There was
right.
no immediately right. no, like with my personal doctor in her
right.
office, which I have been always used to since I was a child, and I loved my pediatrician too.
Right.
The way you
but,
loved
but medicine.
Yours.
But I make the statement in my book, and I will reiterate it, that I do feel that we, the patients, have become a commodity
yes.
to the business of medicine.
Well, let me finish the story here.
So, sure.
Let me just, because I go on to, so now they take me into a room. I'm in a new facility, all right? And I'm not feeling 100% okay either. So I've had allergies and bronchitis, and I saw a pulmonologist many, many years ago who just said to me my lungs were good. The cough was innocuous, not the real problem. But since I had COVID last April, I was having some breathing problems. Okay, so I went to the pulmonologist now. So the assistant came in, the nurse, maybe not a nurse, maybe just an assistant, and she took my blood pressure, and she says to me, "Can you take your shirt off?" in that tone. And I
yeah.
said, "Why would I do that? I've never taken my shirt off to have my blood pressure taken. You just can, I'll pull the sleeve up if you want, but I don't even think I have to do that." And I felt very, very, very threatened and uncomfortable.
Yeah, and it was said with a snarl. It was
yes,
not,
yes. And then I said to her, I said, "You know, when people come in here, they're not feeling well, and you must communicate with them in a kind and gentle way." And
that only set her off more.
Yeah, well, she apologized to me because she already realized she was dealing with someone that she couldn't control. It was sort of a control
right,
toxic
right.
energy. So, I'm not used to anything like that, and poor treatment like that. I was able to talk up to her, but I'm sure other people may not. And the energy in the room was just so uncomfortable.
Well, I hate to say this, but I think this will be the norm for a while.
Oh,
You know, a study was done that was presented about patients when they walk in and their physician steps in the room, and oftentimes the physician will of course ask the patient, "So what are you here for? What's the problem? How are things?" And it was shown that 77% of the time that patient's statement was interrupted, and it was interrupted at 18 seconds. 18 seconds. That's the patient's CE, as opposed to patients, the individual. That is the patients that the physicians now have. They will sit and listen for 18 seconds before trying to move on. It's awful. But again, when the physicians...
And I hate to say this, but some of the people need to be trained in communication skills and how to listen.
Which isn't taught.
Which is what you, which is not taught. I know it's
not
taught. And it needs to be taught.
It's
very,
awful.
It's
you know, you're dealing with human beings,
right.
and unfortunately...
Frightened you. When they're sick, they're frightened.
What is being taught today, unfortunately, and I'm trying to make changes with my interaction with my medical students, is the students are being taught lab values and imaging. And they're not being taught put your hand on the belly, touch the patient. This is a human being. and the kindness and the energy and the warmth that occurs just by human touch,
yes,
is missing.
Well, I'm a Reiki practitioner, so I understand how to interact, and I help
but
people
it's feel remarkable.
More comfortable with their own energy and to relax and to not be in a state like this. But I want to tell you something else. When the pulmonologist walked in, the energy shifted in the room, and she was absolutely magnificent. Her
but you know what
handling
also
of
was
my
missing?
Situation was very, very personal and very good.
But what is also missing today is, due to the presence of the electronic health care record, is eye contact. The physicians are so busy typing in their notes, their back is turned towards you, the questions are asked without them even looking at you.
Yeah.
The environment of healthcare has changed. It has become conveyor belt-like. Mm.
I think you're right. Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. But I had a good experience in this particular.
So it can happen.
It can.
The trouble is that's becoming more the exception than the rule.
Yes, I agree with you. Let's go on to tell of a case where perhaps a patient who was intuitive stuck to their guns, and with your help, you may have made choices that were not completely in alignment with protocol. Now, this is rare, but I think you're the type of doctor that may have done this or been
able
to do this.
And one has to be very cautious because we live in a litigious environment. We live in an environment of guidelines,
mm-hmm.
and one has to have the fortitude, the confidence, but also the wherewithal to know when you can
deviate a little bit.
Push it a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And you're not pushing it for the reasons of being aggressive or cocky. You're doing it because other things aren't working.
Yes.
And there are times when we are, and I dealt with many cancer patients. Most of my practice was cancer, primarily prostate cancer. And patients would come to you with various alternative ways if they want to be managed, and that's fine. I'm completely open up to a point. I am a strong advocate for alternative therapies, but there has to be a line where you draw and say, we have to get back in now. You know, we can let the kite string out so far, and then we have to come back in
you can combine a mixture of therapies,
sure.
Perhaps, that would work. I want to tell this story very quickly. I went to a dermatologist. I had a small little bump in my thigh, and when I touched it, moved it around, it hurt a little bit. So I went to my skin doctor, and he said, "Does it hurt?" Because he didn't really want me to do anything about it. And I said, "Only when I move it around." So then he sent me to the surgeon in the practice, and so they removed it. The only reason I did this was probably because my sister had cancer at the time, and so I figured I should check this out, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I was prudent. Well, it was very painful. I went on a trip that week. I didn't know it would be a big deal. I never think anything will be a big deal. I thought it would be a little bitty thing, and it was a big deal. And
right.
Very painful. And I went on my trip, and I came back in 2 weeks, and he took the stitches out, which were very strange looking stitches to begin with, and he brought in another doctor in the room with him, and I said, something's up, and he said, you know what, we're going to have to make 2 more incisions. And I said, why, is it cancer? And he says, no. So I said, well, what do you think it is? He says, it might be a fungus you picked up in some island or one of your trips. And I said, so how would you treat it? He said, well, it'd give you an antibiotic. So then why would you want to do two more incisions?
Incisions. Yeah.
Because I'm a doctor and that's what I do. Well, I said, I'm an intuitive and that's not what I do. If there is no cancer there, we're done. It's done. I'm glad to hear that and thank you very much. And I walked out. I want to tell you, I'm not usually like this, but I was disturbed for quite
yes.
a while over that encounter, because It was insensitive. Again, I'm talking people going into this field should have some level of sensitivity. And there
well,
was
they need to be patient.
They need patience.
One of my brothers is a physiatrist who specializes in brain injury, closed head trauma, traumatic brain injury. And one day he had his residents mandated to all spend the day in a wheelchair. Everything. You have to do everything in a wheelchair. You have to go from point A to point B. You have to function. You have to get on the bus. You have to deal with the city streets. You have to live in a wheelchair and understand what the disabled are going through. And, yeah, they learned. And the same thing can be said here. The physicians need empathy, which perhaps, you hate to say, you have to go through it to learn from it, but if you can't teach empathy, you have to experience it. But
well,
there's definitely a shortage.
Yeah, but what I'm saying to our listening or audience is that sometimes you have to use your own intuitive sense and say no.
Yes.
You cannot always just
subscribe to a
plan of treatment if it does not feel right. You can get a second opinion, we know within our heart. We know.
That's a very important statement. Right. At the end of the day, the patient is still in charge. It is still the patient. They are the ones who are yesing or knowing to a particular treatment.
Right. But some people don't have that ability to do that. And sometimes it's good if they have someone with them who might help them. And because there will be some people who are just so caught, doctors, nurses, caught up in the system, that they're being moved along too quickly. They're not thinking of all the ramifications of what could happen if they do this procedure. You're obviously not one of them, and my doctors, for the most part, have not been that way either. But there are some like that. So
there are many, and that's where we go back to what I said before, which is this corporate structure that is taking over is a quota system. It's mandating volume, and so the physicians don't have the time. I think many of them want to do the right thing. They went into it for the right reasons, but the system that's managing them doesn't allow such treatment.
We understand. And I want to thank you, Dr. Michael J. Young, author of The Illness of Medicine, for sharing a most expansive and detailed look at the life of a surgeon and the changing issues facing the medical professions, the insurance companies, the pharmaceutical, government interests, and last of all, which should always be first, the patient. In order to learn more about navigating and surviving the system of modern-day medicine and to purchase this book, go to Amazon.com. In summarizing today's episode of Healing From Within, we have seen how Dr. Michael Young, whose father, grandfather, and great-grandfather were all physicians, has brought details and examples of changing doctors' practices, hospital, and medical institutions, so we can see the necessity for the balancing of technology, corporations, and all these different groups, and the personal involvement of medical professionals and their patients, because we want to remember to merge the best of progress and technology with the gentleness of past times, so medicine doesn't decline into an impersonal exchange between the parties where respect, truth, honor, and faith for the needs of all participants are no longer required or honored. True healing is not merely moving beyond symptoms through medical surgery or therapy, it is the ability of the patient and physician to form a human bond for healing the mind, body, and spirit. And we are now aware that corporations control the financing of so much of these industries, and that is being lost. It's a big, big problem. So Dr. Michael Young and I would have you remember not to be overwhelmed by the changes happening now, as there is indeed, spiritually speaking, a personal plan for each of us and a collective plan to advance the soul to greater levels of higher consciousness. Through facing these challenges we've talked about today, we will learn that gratitude, acceptance, intention, and non-judgment may help us to find peace beyond the challenges we are now being given. Change is necessary and often leads to improving our sense of knowing who we are and what values we really think are important in a human cycle. So I suggest that these changes will in time be manageable, and hopefully there will be more people helping to take the glitches out of the system so healthcare can improve. That is the hope. I am your host, Cheryl Glick, author of A New Life Awaits, and I invite you to visit my website, CherylGlick.com, to read about and listen to leaders in the metaphysical, scientific, medical, spiritual, legal, educational, and the arts and music fields who share their discoveries and interest in knowing humanity, evolution, and the search for higher consciousness in more exact ways. Shows may also be heard on webtalkradio.net and dreamvision7radio.com. Thank you.